But tonight I am very pleased to have returning to Many Rivers Books and Tea, Ariella McCarthy. She's the author of The Power of the Possible. I have always enjoyed her visits here. She is a great supporter of the store, and I understand you've moved into the area.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you in Sonoma County.
Thank you.
Tonight, Ariella will be giving a talk on Answers Never Heard to Life's Paradoxes. I want those answers. So, Ariella, thank you very much.
Hi, everybody. I don't know, but never heard, but maybe a little different angle to the answers or questions. So, small intimate group. Lovely. You were here before, I remember? And the two of you knew, right? Because I'm speaking here for the fourth time. They invite me, I'll come. I'm very happy to be here. And Sally, an old friend and supporter. And my love here, Mark. So, very wonderful. Many things we can talk about today. I was, I thought I would do something different and start rather than talking, like I always do, start with talking, I will start with reading. And I want to read to you from the new book that I'm writing, and other than very intimate number of close people nobody has heard. So I'll read to you a bit, and it ties into love, my continuous subject, and something we all have stumbled and fallen and gotten up and rejoiced and hurt. And the roller coaster of love is nothing new. So I want to talk about love tonight, about its paradoxes, about difficulties and the beauty of it, and why sometimes the most obvious things seem very often to be the least attainable. In my experience, in my private practice, working with people, I have come upon again and again, everybody, and I'm no exception, wanting to have love in their lives. And when I would ask them why you want to love, why do you want to have love in your life, why you want to have this relationship, or the one that you have, why you want it to work, or you want to create something new, why? And the answers are always, they are very varied, very different, and hardly ever it is the right answer. So the answers usually are, so that I have a companion, so that I'm not alone, so I have somebody to share my life with. Nothing wrong with those, right? Obvious. Good, correct, seemingly. So that, life is more fun. So what is the right answer? It's neither of these. And the right answer is only one answer, and it is so that I can love. And yes, it sounds obvious once you hear it, but really, how many people live it? And you don't have to answer that out loud, but ask yourself. I'm sure there are times, but predominantly, deeply, loving, it is a challenge. It is something that is not, I'm born and I can feel these feelings and I know how to love. No, it is a skill. It is a skill that needs to be learned, and hopefully eventually the skill may become the art. And that is a life's journey, isn't it? Everyone's. We go about it differently because we are all different. So I'm going to read to you, and the book is a novel. I'm not too late, just right on time. So I'll read to you, and you may have questions, and then we'll go into conversation. All right? Sounds like a plan. It's not the beginning, but it's soon after the beginning. And the action takes place in this particular chapter in 1923 in the country that for only 5 years has been the Soviet Union, and in Leningrad. Leningrad now is again, as you know, St. Petersburg. Okay, so 1923. She gives birth to a girl and calls her Victoria. For victory, she decides, choosing the name. The girl, too beautiful to take your eyes off, is her victory over a lot of things. Too many to mention, too many to think about. She is careful not to cry when David is around. She has caused him enough pain. It is a miracle that he is alive, that the bullet barely scratched his shoulder and only hit the wall behind his back. A miracle no one was standing by that wall or on the other side of it. So many miracles. And the biggest of them all, her daughter. There she is, sleeping peacefully in her crib. In the kitchen, the maid is cooking, and the nanny is on her way to pick up Victoria for her daily stroll. She cannot complain. David is the husband she doesn't deserve. Yet he loves her and thinks differently. We have to put it all behind us, he says. You will recover. I know you will. We have a life together. I will do everything for you and Vika. And I will never leave you. Just give it time. Time will take care of it all. Will it? They say time heals all wounds. Perhaps it's true. But how much time? 3 years of sleepless nights with muffled sobs, her tear-soaked pillow, the only witness. How long does it take a mother to stop hurting for a lost son? Lost to her, but alive, thank God. It could have been different. It could have been the boy who had gotten the bullet. David was reaching to pick him up when the bullet struck. She had been shopping. Her first time away from the baby. She knew who it was, of course, knew it right away, the moment they told her about the shooting. The boy? She gasped. He's all right, unharmed. She hears the hesitation in the nanny's voice, grabs to the edge of the table. Where is he? Where is my child? He took him. That man, the one who shot your husband. He ran into the room like a madman and grabbed the child. So this is how it happens. That's how the nightmare comes. You've replayed it endless times in your mind during the weeks and months of abject fear, during the endless sleepless nights of imagining every possible way you could be discovered. And when it finally strikes, it comes in the least expected way and at the least expected moment. And it hits you harder than you thought anything could ever hit you again. It goes through your gut and leaves you with nothing. Disasters come unannounced. One moment you're shopping for trinkets, and in the next moment, the life like you knew it is gone for good. You let down your guard. You allow hope, still fragile, still new, to slowly take root. Maybe it will all turn out, you think. Maybe it will work out somehow. You will be safe. And something in your heart relaxes. Your husband, always kind to you, suggests you go out, have a good time. The nanny is watching your boy. All is peaceful and all is well. You put on your hat. You notice that the weight you've gained during pregnancy is beginning to drop. You smile and touch your belly. Why not, you think? It will do me good. You kiss your baby and leave the house. You feel no warning, no premonition mothers are supposed to have. Nothing. You just go out. And when you come home, your husband has been shot and your child kidnapped. She won't remember much of what happened next. Time seemed to have stopped, blurring the edges of what was real. To her right, the nanny with her hands clasped, motionless, her back to the wall. To the left, the cook stopped in the doorway, frozen, still clutching at her apron. And then, as if on cue, the piercing chime of the dining room clock breaking the spell like a call for action. She begins to slide down, her back against the hard leg of the dining table. The tablecloth with all that's on it is coming down with her onto the carpet. Something heavy hits the floor with a thump, followed by the sound of glass breaking. All of it distant, unreal, happening somewhere else. She catches her head on the corner of the table, but feels nothing. On the floor now, her back against the table leg, she sits motionless, one leg bent, the other one stretched out, the contents of her back strewn around her leg decoration. Her body is one big lump, too heavy to ever lift off the ground. Water, quick! The nanny yells to the cook, forgetting for a second the household hierarchy, and the cook runs to the kitchen, then back with a wet towel and a tall glass of water in the other hand. There, there, have a sip. She moves the glass away from her face and comes to. She needs to act, and act quickly. Or run to Heinz and beg. Fall on her knees, wrap her arms around his legs. Give me back my child. What use is he to you? Haven't we suffered enough? And for a moment the image stays. What if he relents? He used to love her. There may still be love behind the hatred. She raises her hand to her face, then lets it drop down onto her lap. It is no use. Too late for that anyway. Too late for everything now. Heinz will have no mercy. He won't give her the boy, not without force. Still, she needs to get up. If she could only make her legs move again. The child's life is at stake. Her boy, blameless, barely a month old, already entangled in her mess, already paying for his mother's secret. His son, not his son. His Aaron, another man's child. The boy he held in his arms, nearly fainted at his circumcision, soothed his sobs, walked pressing him to his chest till the boy fell asleep. Not his son. Too much to absorb, this news. He's just been shot, his mind still foggy. Bursts of pain shooting through his shoulder, taking all of his strength. Is this how God shows his mercy? By giving you pain in the body to delay the pain in your heart? His son, not his son. His wife, another man's woman. Is he really that surprised? Hadn't there always been something he was refusing to see? The tears she hid from him, the tears he let her find. It would pass, he thought, just a phase, a woman's thing, that's all. That's all. To believe he could ever have the strange wild girl he had married as his own. When from the very beginning something in her eyes was warning him, telling him to tread lightly. And he did. Too lightly, perhaps. Looking away when he needed to ask the question. Where have you been? He needed to ask. But he never did. And now this. Leave her. As impossible as cutting off his limb. What then? The throbbing pain in his shoulder, so vicious it makes him wince, he closes his eyes. Time. He must give it time. Time will absorb the blow, dull the sharpness, help him store the pain with all other pain in a deep, dark place he knows well. Store it so far, he will eventually forget it. His wife, aged 100 years in just a few hours. What's his small pain compared to hers? His isn't the only world that has come crashing down this morning. Yet, here she is, broken and waiting for his judgment. Forgive me. What can he offer this wounded girl who just told him her darkest secret? What can he, a simple man, offer this girl whose heart had been broken before he even met her? Long before the matchmaker showed up at his door, uninvited, telling him she had found him a bride. A very good family, well-respected, religious, moneyed, and the girl, a real looker, just wait till you see her, educated, studied theater, such folly, but girls will be girls. And right then, he felt it, the urge to go, to meet her as soon as he could. Why then? How many times did he send this matchmaker off? Not interested, not yet. Until that last time when a feeling he couldn't recognize made him say, yes, take me there, make the introduction. Seeing Russia and not liking her at first. Too short, too different, in ways he wouldn't find words to describe. Still, drawn to her inexplicably, proposing after only 2 weeks and being accepted. All this so quick, so without question, like keeping a promise he didn't know he had made, keeping it anyway, responding to something in her eyes, saying yes. What can he give her that would replace what she had already lost? Nothing. Nothing at all. Yet here she is, asking his forgiveness. Forgiveness. Squeezing the metal post of the bed frame so hard his nails bite into the flesh of his hand, he looks at his wife's face. She has stopped crying, and her tear-stained face is swollen, blotchy. Two bright stains burn on her cheeks like red marks of shame. He wants to reach to her, wipe them off with the lightest touch, erase her suffering, turn back the clock. She's not looking at him. Her eyes are fastened onto the dark floorboards beneath her feet, worn out, needing replacement years ago. She has finished her story and is now waiting for his verdict. What can he give her? What will it take to melt away this sorrow that's become so much a part of her he's never even noticed it before? Worse now that her child is taken. What can he possibly give her that God himself had refused to give? He leans forward in bed and touches her hand. Pain cuts his shoulder in two like a blade of a newly sharpened knife, and he gasps. Hope. I can give her hope. Hope for a different life. I can give her that. Both the hope and the life. And kindness. Who would I be not to? He will forgive her. Forgive it all. And he will also forget. The scar on his shoulder, he won't even notice it in time. The man who took his son, he too will be forgiven. The boy was not his to keep. He will not press charges. He will let it be, let it go. What right does he have not to? These two had loved and had lost, and still loved against everything, and lost again. What would he have done in their place? He can't answer that. Only what he will do in his own place. He will give her kindness. Kindness and hope and love. And he will wait. Things are over between these two. This he knows. Love has been poisoned, darkened, lost. Time will heal it all. He has to believe it. Time does heal and will. Together, they will make a life, a new life. No more lies, no more deception, no more secrets. on the ruins of a broken trust, a new trust will be built, scarred and real, and stronger for this. He reaches for his wife's hand. He reaches for his wife and takes her hand, gently at first, then firmly, like a man. In his large hand, her small one fits like a hand of a fragile bird. White knuckles and pearly skin, and hidden underneath his fingers, it turns and squeezes back. Huh? What have we seen happen here? That's a true story, by the way. I see smiles. I thought I would read it because it shows a way how you can take a pretty crazy situation, a betrayal of a major kind you could think of, right? And having been shot, and a simple man who found in his heart the depth of love for his wife and could see beyond what happened, beyond her deception, beyond the loss of the child, into the depth of her pain. He was able to put his own pain aside and made a very powerful choice. And what was the powerful choice? To be kind. Simply to be kind. And once that choice was made, forgiveness and forgiving, it was a done deal. It already happened. And how often do we refuse to even entertain that concept, that possibility, because we're so stuck on being right and so stuck on having been wrong. Damn it, you know, and I deal with it all the time with people that I work with. Just a couple of days ago, a client of mine and a good friend, a man in his 50s, he sent me, prior to coming, an entire chain of emails that have happened between him and his mother, who is in her probably middle, late 80s on the East Coast. And he wanted me to read it first, so by the time he comes to talk, then I could see how horrible how she was treating him badly, and how he cannot take it anymore. And honestly, I read the entire correspondence, and I saw nothing but really loving exchange with the son and his mother, seriously. Besides, I know the background. And then when he came, he said, "What did you see?" I said, "No, I didn't see it." So, what? Tell me, what did you see? He goes, "For 4 days, did you see how she was just one line, just one line?" What was the line? Well, she said, "Well, I sent you something. What's happening? I haven't heard back." That's it. For 4 days, he made his life, his own life, miserable. This is not uncommon. This is why I'm sharing, because it is so common. Does she know I am busy? Don't I have a life? Isn't it enough that I'm responding to them? Why? 4 days. What do you think his partner felt while being around this man for 4 days? Wonderful energy, a lot of love, a lot of kindness, a lot of really good presence. And I said, "Listen, She's in her late 80s. She's all alone. This is the only life she has, is the emails. Let it go. Why, what? Forgive her, please. She's not going to change. Sounds very obvious, right? Not when it's happening in your life. And it's your mother. Well, that was his wife. And he just lost the boy. So, why is it so hard to be loving? And what does it mean to be loving? And the answer is, the way I understood it, and I'm of course still learning and learning all the time, that is an endless, never-ending journey as long as we're here in the body. But what I understood some time ago, thank God, is how different everyone is, how different we all are, and the way we want, each one of us wants to be loved is different. It's very different. Here's another example. Again, a man. I usually have examples about women, about men. He was complaining that, you know, he doesn't understand. Difficulties in the marriage. Loves his wife, she loves him. Difficulties. She says, I tell her all the time that I love you. And every time she says, yeah, but what is about me that you love? What? And he says, well, I don't know what to tell her. I love her. And I said, so how hard is it? So she wants to be loved not the way you want to love her. For you, she tells you, I love you, is enough. But for her, it's not. She wants to hear what? What is it about her? She wants you to tell her something nice, in other words. Right? So for this man to be loving is to pay attention to his wife. What is it that she wants? She wants to hear some good feedback. He doesn't need it, so he doesn't understand. Can you step aside from what you need and give her what she needs? How hard is it? Is there anything nice about her that you can tell her? Of course, tons of things. So what's such a problem? Tell. No? And I saw him a week later. He said, Ariella, it's a miracle. We had such a good time. What did you do? Oh, I just started. Because we wrote it down. How do you love? How are you loving to another? It is a skill. It is something to learn. I teach it. But, I mean, there are probably many places you can learn it. Everybody teaches it differently. You want to be loving to a person so that they, in the interaction with you, feel seen, feel safe, feel accepted as they are. That means you don't have to change them. It's tough, I know. feel close. So if he or she asks, how do I look? And you take a look, I say, everything is great, yeah. Maybe you want to change your scarf. Do you really need to say it? This is so critical. Maybe you want to say it later, if it's so critical. But maybe first you look beautiful. Yes, and if maybe you're not even sure to what will be achieved if you say you really don't look so good tonight. And you just go, what will be achieved? Nothing. Did you get any closer? So... So am I supposed to lie? No, you're not supposed to lie. There's always something good you can see. Well, here is another example. You want to be loving or you want to be difficult and have... I'm going to be honest, that is. I can't lie. I have to be honest. Here's another example. Again, man and wife. She is constantly looking how to lose weight and how to get healthier. And she has discovered a new regime that she's very excited about. It costs some money because there's supplements and stuff. Always these things are involved, often, not always. And she's very excited, so she wants her husband to support her in this, right? what do you think about this? And she gives him materials to read, and she shows him, and I just lost a couple of inches here, and, you know, what do you think? Do you think it's just another kick? And this is the husband. He's answering, well, frankly, I think it's a waste of time and money. That's to me. But I really believe it. I was supposed to lie to my wife. I said, is there perhaps something else you could have seen that you don't have to lie? I said, what has been achieved by this? Did you get closer? Did she feel after that close to you? He goes, no, she withdrew. She withdrew and there was silence. And I don't know where to go. What did I do wrong? She asked the question. I said, it's the same thing as with the glass. I just have full and half empty. The usual example. Cliche, okay, but it's the same glass, right? Mm-hmm. Is there anything you can see in the fact that she's doing this that is positive? Well, I really don't know. I said, how about that she's so dedicated to staying healthy and to healing her body and to, you know, having good energy and looking good so she can feel good about her accomplishment. It's not about, you know, it's about her health. Can you see that? The determination, the will, focus. Yeah, I can see that. So could you have told her that? I suppose I could. It's just an intelligent guy, a very good person, loving. Not loving by the way she wants to be loved. She does the same thing. It's not like, it's always so. The thing is, nothing changes until we do. We can wait for the other person to change, or we can start acting differently. And it only takes one. That is the beautiful part. It really only takes one. As we start doing something different, very strange thing happens. Our partners change. It has been proven. This entire book, story after story, the person change, and the relationship changes. So I can continue talking, but maybe questions? Do you have any questions, any comments, any thoughts? No? I don't believe it. Well, I can take two questions from the write-up. If so, one was what? If what you did was for my own good, how come all I feel is anger? Have you ever been in this situation, anyone? Rescuers get slaughtered. Only help if you're asked. Do not rush in with your help when you are not asked. What is it's a paradox, but you want to be giving, you want to be helpful. Just be there, here, be present, be kind. If you ask for advice, give advice once. You ask the same thing again and again and again, it's a manipulation. Change the subject. You may reconsider spending that much time with this person, or if it goes the same direction, don't go there because they don't really want to hear. But if you just, I just came and cleaned your desk because your desk was a mess. Isn't it nice now? Are you going to be happy? You don't know where anything is anymore? That's a true story. I was interviewed when the book came out. I had a lot of interviews on the radio, and prior to that, at times, a host would call and we would talk, and we were talking about this, and she said, my friend is an attorney, and I came to her office and it was such a mess. Papers were everywhere, on the floor, on the desk, everywhere there was stacks of papers. So one, I decided, you know, I'm going to help her because I'm very good at organizing. I took a day. She didn't tell her. I took a day off and I came and I said, look, you just work and I'll work around you and I'll clean up this whole mess. And the woman got so angry. And she said, this is not a mess. I know where everything is. This is how I work. I never asked. Because I took a day off. Go do something. And she got her feelings hurt. This is a true story. She told me. She said, what did I do wrong? I said, everything. You intruded. You didn't respect her. You acted like you knew better. It's a one-up situation. It may be very subtle. But if you think about it, it's not that subtle. It's an assumption that you know better. You know? What's the way to go? I can say, look, I mean, this is an interesting style of the way you work. I mean, I have, I'm actually, for me, I would be crazy, but obviously it's working for you. It's like, if you ever want me to help you, if you ever want somebody to help, I'm good at that, just let me know. And drop it. And forget about it. No? That's loving somebody the way they want to be loved. So how come all they feel is anger? Because you haven't been loving. Yeah, I'm trying to help me. You're doing it better then. Make sense? It's an innocent example, but it was a big rift between two women friends after that.
Not exactly casually.
Happened? Same thing?
When the friend coming in and completely thinking she was treating it at my desk, and then I would be so pleased and I was furious.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Of course. Yeah. Well,
I was like, how dare you touch my papers without asking me?
I'd be furious because I like to spread everything. Then I see, if I put it all away, I forget about the projects. But you know, some other people work differently. I really have nothing but admiration for the different styles. I don't have that skill. Okay, so let's take another question. Another thing in the write-up was, I said I'm sorry, and you have told me you've forgiven me. How come I don't feel forgiven?
Yeah.
Familiar? Sometimes I forgive you, it's okay, no problem. But you still feel. It's really quite uncomplicated because you have not forgiven yourself. Why have you not forgiven yourself? Because you're not really, really sorry in this case, to be honest with yourself. Because if you've done something you really regret, you're going to feel it. You'll let yourself feel it. You're going to let yourself feel that remorse. I'm really sorry, God. And then you will apologize and it will be real. And when somebody forgives you, it is a relief. You can cry. It's like something's lifted. But if you saw you did something wrong, and the feelings that started coming with this, that sorrow, that remorse, were too much. In order to not go that far, and it's very often too much, depending on what you did, in order to stop that feeling, which is difficult, that remorse, you judge yourself as a bad person. I always do that. Typical me, I'm stupid, I'm dumb, I'm very cold, I'm whatever. And it's so fast, it's a habit, it's a very worn path. Made yourself wrong, judge yourself. The function of this is to stop that feeling. And then that remorse that would have been difficult and painful but would have freed you didn't happen. And judgment doesn't change anything. It keeps you stuck. So then when you say, I'm sorry, you've not forgiven yourself, because you can't forgive yourself if you have nothing to forgive, if you stop that feeling, if it's just logical, but not in your heart. If you stop that flow of tears, whether they're tears or whether they're internal, then the person may sincerely forgive you. Absolutely. But what you're going to feel is you've just manipulated them successfully. You will not feel forgiven. And relief and release will not come. The pain will remain. And you'll do it again. You will do it again. Because in order for change to happen, for for each one of us. Forgiveness has to precede it. It's not something we can negotiate with ourselves. It's the law of the universe. It's the energy. Forgiveness brings freedom. And then we can change. It's a process. You see what you did wrong. With that, the feelings come. The feelings are, you can be ashamed, you can be embarrassed, you can be very sad about it. You can deeply, deeply regret it. You'll be horrified. But if you judge yourself there and then as a bad person, everything, end of process. You haven't forgiven yourself. You stopped it. And you'll do it again. Because there's something inside that allows this to happen. And it's not the will power that will stop the next occurrence. In order to be able to make the right choice, it has to be organic, has to be inside, it has to be out of internal change. Internal change follows forgiveness. Forgive yourself. If you see something, very often parents have regrets looking back. Yeah, we could have been better parents. Okay, so could have ours, our own parents. Nobody's perfect. If you learn, or grandparents, or siblings, or lovers, spouses, whatever, you see what you did. You're deeply, deeply sorry about it. Whether you tell the person or not, maybe there is no room to tell them. Maybe they're dead. I mean, who knows? It starts with yourself. If you have forgiven yourself, and you can after you have felt it, that deep remorse, you won't do it again. At least chances that you won't are much, much stronger. So there is really a good reason to feel the difficult feelings. Yes, it's all about forgiveness, this book. Change and forgiveness. All true stories. But I mean, I talked about it 3 times here, so I didn't want to do it again. But every time something different. So, there we go. Your turn.
You said that your novels, or what you read to us, is based on a true story. Was that someone in your family?
It's someone in my family. You know, truth is more amazing than fiction, right? They say for fiction it has to be believable.
Did you give the answers to the paradox?
Hopefully there will be.
About for tonight, you're saying.
Do you have a question?
Oh, well, you were saying you were going to give us answers we never heard to life's paradoxes.
Well, you tell me. It's a very big question that we can do that much in an evening discussion, but we can touch upon something.
Why do there have to be paradoxes?
Life is a paradox. If it's not a paradox, probably it's not even real. Because it's polarities and it's dark and light.
And questions, you were in your example and you were talking about the person who says I'm sorry and then you don't feel forgiven. And so what about the other side of it? What about when we, like, let's say if I forgive you for doing something terrible, mm-hmm. that I thought was terrible, and I forgive you and I forgive, but it's still like it's not like completely clean, gone, forgiven.
So you haven't forgiven.
Right.
So like you don't trust him, won't do it again or something?
I don't know. I guess that's what I'm asking about. It's like what blocks the forgiveness from being really full?
Because forgiveness is a mystery. Its mechanism is very hard to explain. We can't quite comprehend how it works, but it is a choice. Forgiving somebody for something is just like, here's your clenched fist, and you just opened it. Very often, people don't want to, because if you keep holding on to it, you can continue to relive the pain, you can continue to blame, you can continue to justify a lot of actions, a lot of behaviors. Somebody hurt you years ago. Let's take a relationship example. I won't trust again because I don't want to be hurt again. It hurt too much last time. So, what is written here? I don't expect too much because I will be hurt again. So I didn't really forgive because you're afraid to be hurt again. You're holding on to the old pain. So there's always a payoff. Why? What the question is, if you can't let go, two things may prevent letting go. There are feelings that have to be felt, so the forgiveness has to happen. Somebody says, forgive me, very often is not enough. You need to feel the feelings. You need to feel the anger. You need to feel the rage, the hurt, the pain, whatever there is, and let it go. If you don't, it's going to be hard to forgive. And it can be all of 20 minutes, or it could be the entire day where you will be angry and you will cry, but then you have to let it go. It is a choice, and people feel it, and then they think, damn it, I'm not going to do it. Because if I do it, I will forget. Oh, he did it, I can't forget. And you take it right back. As liver problems usually related to not being able to let go. It's a choice. Usually, for everything, there is a payoff. What is the payoff? Payoffs are not pretty. But, you know, we're all human. We all take them now and then. So nobody has to know. Be honest with yourself. It's very important. So if it's a cash, you can ask yourself, what am I getting out of it? Like, maybe I like to blame. Maybe I like to... Who knows? It's sometimes you just get it, and it's so clear, like light went on your head. And you'll go at that moment. Read a couple of stories. It's going to be completely uplifting. You'll see what people have forgiven. Stunning and how life changed. It is like it killing us, you know, if we keep holding on to the pain.
So in my own life, I've had the most difficulty forgiving when someone I'm very fond of has been, in my opinion, wronged by another person.
Of course.
I might not even know that other person. Can I give an example?
Of course.
When I was quite young, I thought a relative had been mean to my mother. So I think maybe I was like 8 or something.
Oh, my,
and,
of course.
You know, like, and I took on an animus to this, you know, relative. I did not like her, you know. Like, I mean, this went on for years, you know, like maybe 15 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And then one day my mother, I was visiting my mother, and she mentioned that this relative was coming to visit, and that I must have, my face must have changed or something. She said, well, what's wrong? And I said, don't you remember when she da-da-da-da-da? And my mother goes, no, I don't remember that at all.
That's a beautiful story.
And all of a sudden, I felt it was like this weight had completely, you know, like I just, you know, like I was just, I saw that I had like created this, not just for a little bit stretch of time, but for like years.
It's like carrying poison inside.
It's like carrying poison, yeah.
How beautiful to see.
So I wonder if you could expand, because I've noticed that's kind of a pattern in my life of getting like really kind of tight around somebody else doing something to some, you know, like that kind of triangle.
Like justice.
Oh, justice, nice. What I wanted was justice.
Yeah, and you're a very loyal friend. So you can know this about yourself. It's a beautiful thing, but you don't want to take it to that direction. Mm-hmm. It's just choosing how you want to live. We can hold on, or we can be free. And sometimes such wrongs have been perpetrated that nobody could ever begrudge a person for feeling this. But the person who could let go can be free. And the perpetrator of that crime, between them and their God, whatever their spirituality is, or their consciousness. Not my problem. Who heard me talk about Eva Kaur, the one that the Holocaust survived? Did I talk about it last time? In two words, she was, she and her 10-year-old twin. They were 10-year-old, two girls, 10 years old, and the entire family, Auschwitz. Many people, all died. The two twins were in the concentration camp's death lab, because Dr. Death, Dr. Mengele, experimented on humans for their research, and they were very interested in twins, among other things. So the most unimaginable things happened to these girls, and but they survived. It was 1 year, and after that they were, the camp, well, the war was over, they were liberated. One went to Israel, one went to America. The one that went to America, her name is Eva Kaur. Actually, I don't even know, maybe they both, I don't know how it happened, but present time, in a number of years already, Eva is in America. And so like most Holocaust survivors, she was living absolutely consumed by the pain of what happened to her. Understandably, right? A lot of rage, a lot of anger. And then she wanted, she never saw the gas chambers. She was afraid even to go in that direction. She thought she'd die. And she wanted to meet, she wanted to find a Nazi, somebody, a Nazi doctor, somebody who is still alive, who would sign a paperwork that, yes, gas chambers did exist. Because there was a lot of talk, still is, that maybe it never happened. Well, she was just, I met her. She's a very amazing, amazing woman, full of life, full of energy, full of spunk. I couldn't believe what was this show. And she said, where do you find a Nazi doctor? They're doctors, they don't advertise in the yellow pages. But it so happened that a German television was making a documentary, something around Holocaust, and they were, yeah, they asked her, and he was also there, the Nazi doctor, still living in Germany now, and she was able to get his address. They gave it to her. And she flew to Germany. She flew to Germany. She said she was in her 60s at the time. She was terrified being on the plane, just hearing the German language on the German airlines, because all these memories. And she came to the address, and she rang the doorbell, and a very distinguished-looking, older than her gentleman opened the door, and he could not have been more gracious to her. And it was the most amazing experience, because she came, you know, terrified, and he was a Nazi doctor in the past, but he was very gracious and very kind to her, and he said, this is my sorrow that I live with every day and every night. His job was to record, to watch people die through the little window and then go in and to record how many died. That was his job. He was a soldier, he was a medical student. So he's living with this. And he signed all the paperwork that she asked, that indeed it did happen. And for 6 months, she was overwhelmed with gratitude, and she was thinking what to give him, what gift to send him for being so, you know, gracious to her and for signing this paper. And she couldn't find anything, not even a card that was appropriate. You know? For 6 months, she was, it's a true story. And she, and one day she just had an enlightened moment, and she realized, I can't give him forgiveness. I can forgive him. And that started an entire process of awakening for Eva Kaur. And suddenly, she realized, she didn't read any books, she didn't do any workshops, she just woke up. And she said, she realized, I have the power to forgive. And she said, this power is mine. Nobody can give it to me. Nobody can take it away. I can simply forgive and move on. The rest is between them and them. And you can imagine, she has tremendous opposition among other Holocaust survivors. How can you forgive? And she says, because I deserve it. She said, I didn't do anything wrong. Why should I carry it? Very pragmatic. And on the 50th anniversary of Auschwitz, she was there, of the liberation of Auschwitz, she was there with her family, two grown-up children, and she forgave officially. She made a speech. She forgave Hitler, everybody else, and the entire Nazi mentality. And then she forgave her parents. What to forgive her parents for? They died in Auschwitz. She hated her parents for 50 years, because they were supposed to protect their children. And logic didn't apply, didn't matter. It's an emotional thing. That they also died didn't matter. An adult woman, a mother herself, hated her parents all these years. Imagine what it did to her body. And then she forgave herself for hating her parents. And she says forgiveness is the best medicine. It is free, it has no side effects, and it works. I'm just quoting.
Well, it does have some wonderful side effects.
Yeah. Yes, positive side effects, yeah. I'm just quoting because I was so impressed with this woman. And she travels around the world and she talks. She makes everybody laugh. And her husband is a Holocaust survivor that thinks she's crazy.
Wow. Great story.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And true. So, it's just a choice. Mm-hmm. You recognize you have this fierce loyalty, which is a beautiful thing, and you can use it differently. This one, you let go.
Does that kind of fierce loyalty sort of inevitably lead to those kinds
of... Not necessarily.
No.
But it's... I understand that very well. It's simply a choice. It's just to retrain yourself. Yeah. It's a very pragmatic thing. Well, anything else? No questions. Is anyone here on my mailing list? I actually do have a mailing list that I use incredibly seldom. Very, very, very seldom.
And what do you use it for?
Well, I'm going to teach a workshop on how to love, on how to give up martyrhood. Why it doesn't work. Martyring yourself. Being martyred. Basically, I'm right. It never works. It's a very long conversation. Not for tonight. Basically, nothing ever comes easy. Always hard, always struggle, always burdened. If you can relate to any of those feelings, feeling misunderstood, feeling accused of things you're not guilty of, unappreciated, the things you do, burdened, having problems with too many people, wanting too many things, struggling with stuff. Any one of these or all of these, you can benefit from a workshop like this. And I think it's pretty much the humanity at large. But I keep promising the workshop. It's just I've been too busy with other things. But I'm settling down and I'm actually going to resume this work. So if that happens, I will send you an invitation. And then if it speaks to you, then welcome to come. So nobody's, if it's only how many of you. You know me. Four. It's really very, very complex. You know? It appears, people say loving is action, and it is action. But what does it really mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you need a book to put on the writing? Do you have a question? No.
Thank you.
Maybe more of a comment than a question.
Okay, great. I'm just checking if this is.
I had similar experiences where I had a friend and another friend. They got into a fight. I got very upset about the way this one treated the other one. And I carried it for about a year and met this friend of my friend at a picnic. I was still really angry. Mm-hmm. But they weren't, they'd completely gotten through it. It had nothing to do. I was carrying it all. It had nothing to do. They didn't have it anymore. They got through their fight. I just got involved where I didn't need to or should have been involved. I got emotionally entangled in their stuff. And so that was a really good lesson for me. I was like, okay, so what's between two people that I don't know, is between two people? You don't know. And so not to get involved in other people's stuff, mm-hmm. was the lesson I took home from that. It's just that, their relationship is their life. I'm not going to judge this person. I mean, maybe I didn't like the way they treated each other, but they obviously worked it out.
Yeah.
I hadn't worked it out. Yeah. So for a whole year, I was carrying all this, I was angry. I thought she was a bad person. But as it turned out, and then I was able to let it go and see that, no, that was just their stuff. Mm-hmm. But it didn't have anything to do with me. I'd gotten involved where I shouldn't have gotten involved. So for me, that was great.
That reminds me.
Yeah, I
can relate. I just remembered when my son was a troublemaker at school. And that we used to have a gallery years ago, an art gallery. And so he graduated from high school. And it was a gallery opening, and I see the teacher who was like, I couldn't forgive that teacher for not giving my son a good recommendation. It was middle school. He wouldn't give them a recommendation for the high school. And I held that grudge. So my son's grown up. This teacher comes with his girlfriend or with whoever to the opening. And suddenly I see this man entering my gallery. And it was such a shock. And I said, are you on the mailing list? And he looks at me and goes, please don't take me off. And I'm thinking, immediately I'm going to go check and take you off. That's all long ago, before I learned better. And I turned to my son and I said, can you believe it? He has the nerve to come to the opening. And he goes, Mom, I was awful. I was horrible. Well, of course. By the mother, her son. I never forgot it.
Yeah.
No, it's the same.
Thank you.
I think people do that
when couples think they'll get divorced.
Yeah.
They'll leap to one side or the other.
You know the word of wisdom? Do never tell your partner anything. You're having a fight with your family, mother with your mother, with your brother, with her, because you're going to make it up and forget. But they won't.
Yeah.
They will remember.
Yeah.
This is just wisdom. Or tell, but do not elaborate. Because it's people in your own family, you forgive. You go on. Ideally, you know each other. But this, on the side, you've been wrong in their eyes. No? Okay.
Thank you. That's good. I'm glad I came.
Thank you.
47
Thank
miles.
You.
Oh, God. Sally, sweetie.
You're a wonderful storyteller.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it.
I can tell you, I've worked with her for 2 years and I'm not giving her up yet. So if you get a chance to work in the group, I encourage
thank you. Thank you, Sally. Yeah, it's we can do so much and we can have a taste. But, you know, you give me your information and you'll know what's happening. Give them to me. And do you have my cards? My business cards?
On the counter are Ariella's business cards and also a little flyer.
Was the story interesting to you?
Yes. Very, very well.
Beautifully written.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I guess we wouldn't expect any less. Such an intelligent, bright,
my fan.
Sadly.
Thank you very much.
Oh,
I appreciate
so
it. It's always so good to see you. I always learn something. Every time you come and visit.
Yeah,
you know.
It's been not too long ago, I guess.
You're not local.